National Council of Jewish Women Oral History Project Number 2, and it's Vicki and Lou Goldzer. And can you tell us your name, please?
Flora Myers Isaacs.
Now what's today's date?
June 10th.
Mm-hmm. 1987. Okay, you want
to try that? Let her speak a little.
Tell us your address.
5628 Darlington Road.
Okay, and when were you born?
August the 12th, 1901.
Okay, now we're going to check and see if we're working okay. Okay, what we want to start to talk about is a history of the Outlook, you know, the publication. How it started and when and what happened.
You okay. Want the names and everything?
Yeah, well, whatever you can remember. When was it that they started thinking about it?
Let me see. 1934. This chair will be more comfortable.
Okay, 1934, was it your husband's idea?
No. Eddie Himmelblau and Albert Gollum, who worked for the Anglo-Jewish paper at that time called The Criterion, which was owned by David Alter. And they decided to publish another paper called The American Jewish Outlook. The first meeting was held at our home.
Okay. Who was there?
Ethel Gollum and her husband Albert, Eddie Himmelblau, my brother Joe Myers, who was supposed to be on an advisory board, and Ann X. Elfrin.
What was the purpose of the paper?
Why was it felt that there was another one necessary? Well, the purpose of it was to print a paper that was not a society column. You know, they wanted as a business adventure, too. They were working for somebody else.
Was there a Zionist outlook on this? Was there a Zionist purpose in this particular
Were they
time?
Pro-Israel?
A what?
Pro-Israel.
Oh, well, the editorials were always pro-Israel, yeah, sure. I can show you articles that my husband had written.
Had he gone over to Israel? Have you traveled to Israel?
Yes, we were in Israel in 1961.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so while Dr. Isaacs was at the university, he was also editor of this paper?
Yes.
At the university and editor, okay. And then what happened to the paper?
They were forming it and they asked me for some suggestions, and I suggested a food column, but I'd like to make it a little bit different than the average food column. And we figured out a name, Pots and Pans. Mm-hmm. And they asked me if I would do it, and I said I would do it. I said, are you out of your cotton picking? I have enough to do. They said, would you do it until we get somebody for a couple of weeks? And I said, well, I'll do it for a couple of weeks. They never got anybody, and I did it for 20 years.
Oh, my. Where'd you get the recipe?
Well, originally I used my own recipes. And then different food companies found out about this paper. You know, they had what they call exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
I would get recipes. I didn't solicit the recipes. They were sent to me from H.J. Hines, from Rokea Manischewitz, a lot of, I can't begin to tell you, there were numerous different food companies that would send me recipes. They also, Procter & Gamble and these other places, and they would send me pictures, maps that we used too on occasion. But the one that I was most interested, I found these in Asher's papers because We had bound copies. Every 6 months they would bind these copies. And we had about 26 of them. And they were taking up so much room up in the study that my husband called up the Hebrew Institute and asked them if they would like them in their library for references. And they said, oh, they would be happy to have them. They sent for them. And some years later, I wanted to go up and look up something. And I went up to the library and I couldn't find them. And I talked to Saul Abrams. And he says, oh, he says, well, we reorganized and we didn't have any room for them, so we burnt them. Mm. Now, why didn't they call us and ask us if we wanted them back? But in the meantime, Asher had clipped out some of my recipes. And this is one in particular that I'd like to read because it's connected with the Council of Jewish Women. They were having a campaign for their service shop.
What was the date?
January 22nd, 1937.
Mm-hmm.
Can I read it?
Sure.
The heading is gather up those, I didn't put the heading in, gather up those odds and ends you've been saving and give Council's service shop a call.
Okay, well, I think if you give it to us, we'll photostat it and put it in, and that'll be better.
That'll be better.
You know what I mean?
What?
Can you lend it to us, and we'll photostat
it.
It'll be pasted on instead of reading it.
Oh, you want to paste it on?
Yeah,
make a copy,
and I'll return it to you. Okay? I won't be like Hebrew Institute. I'll return it. All right? Isn't that nice? Your own poem. Okay, they want to paste it in instead.
Well, I have several that I think are very interesting.
Yeah. So we'll do that one. Okay.
Now, this one was when the King and Queen of England were here.
Why were they here?
I don't know what the date this was.
I mean, what were they doing here?
They came on a visit, and they were entertained at Hyde Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote this.
Isn't that something?
Can I
work? We'll put that one in too. Yeah. So we can get more information. That's dressed up. Isn't that something?
Well, if you want, you can take these. This is some of the stuff that I had written.
Well, I think we'll take those two because they're historical. You know what I mean?
This one was about the Hadassah donor.
No, but they went to. We'll keep it to council and that. That's terrific. Isn't that something? Now, what were you doing while you were writing this, raising your daughter?
I was active in organizations. Mm-hmm. I was secretary of the House of Shelter. I don't know if you know what that
is.
That? And according to the Jewish law, a big city's supposed to have a place where these transgender.
Rabbi.
You know what a mishloach is?
Sure.
Where these mishlochim could come, or a rabbi, or these itinerant travelers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed, every big city is supposed to
we
have.
We don't have it anymore, I don't think.
I'll tell you what happened. It was run by the Federation. If you paid $10 to the Federation, you were eligible to be on the board. And the board of directors took care of this house. The house was on Locust Street. It was around the corner from where I live.
What was it called?
It's the House of Shelter, but in Hebrew it was called, I don't know if I can pronounce it, Hafnosis Orachim.
How many years did it exist? How many years?
Mm-hmm. I really don't know.
When did it start?
When I became active in it was probably started, I think, by Rabbi Shinsky, but I'm not positive.
And then?
It was here for many, many years, and some of these so-called hobos coming from New York would pass our house, and they couldn't say the Hebrew name, but they used to say, can you tell me where the Knock'em Sock'em house is? And we called it the Knock'em Sock'em house.
You could stay there.
They had a social worker that came there. Eventually, it became a place for transients. And it really cost the Federation so much because they had a housekeeper there that did the cooking. And the board met once a month and took up whatever was necessary to take up. Now, I was secretary and publicity chairman for many, many years. I got inveigled into that.
Like the pots.
Eventually, the war came along and there were no transients, and they decided the government was buying up property in that area.
Why?
Well, for government employees.
What were they doing there?
They bought it for residences. And they bought this house. We sold it to the government.
Well, what were the government employees doing there?
Well, I don't know I just don't know what the purpose was, but the government was buying up property around there, and they asked if this was available. And
maybe they worked downtown or something, although never heard about that. That's interesting.
So we could have, there were so few people coming there that they could have stayed at the William Penn Hotel for what it cost to live there. So the Federation got the idea that they would issue food tickets to anybody that came and take care of them that way. Money was turned over to the Federation, and at that time, the Federation president was Dr. Taylor.
I bet they still have the money.
What?
I bet they still have the money for that purpose.
Well, we had a board, and we used to serve coffee and cake. We bring refreshments at the end of the meeting. After the building was sold, we met, and nobody would come to the meetings. The president of the was Ella Alburn. Do you know her? She was very active in Pittsburgh. And we couldn't get anybody to come to the meetings. So we had this money, and we put it in the Washington Trust Company at, I think.
How much money was it?
We had, at that time, I think it was $17,000.
A lot of money.
In those days.
What year was that? During the war, World War II.
Oh, I don't.
42.
I guess it must have been, yes, in the 40s. And we found out that Franklin Federal opened up here in Squirrel Hill, and they were giving 2.5%. I think they were giving more interest, and we took the money out of the Washington Trust Company. We felt that it was public money, and if we could get the
more money,
smart lady,
right
there. It came to the point where the only people that would come to the meeting was the president, myself, and the secretary, who was her name was Deborah Mandel. And we felt that it was wrong to keep this money in the bank and not use it. And we decided that we ought to give it to the Federation. Some of the people that didn't even come to the meeting said, over my dead body will I get let Dr. Taylor. He wasn't well liked. Well, all of the old members died off, and there were just the three of us, and then Ms. Deborah Mandel moved to Florida. And Mrs. Alburn, I said to her, I said, and I had, every year I would get a statement from some, an accounting company. It was a nuisance. And I said, listen, this is public money. We have a federation. I suggest that we give this money. But in order to give it to the federation, we had to have at least 10 people sign a paper. She had a meeting at her home. And she invited her neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
The only one that I can remember, I think, that came was Myrtle Fisher, and she had these signatures which permitted us to give it to the Federation. Now, the Federation said they would accept it with no strings attached to it.
Now, you couldn't start.
But we asked them if any transients came to Pittsburgh, that they would have to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the end of that.
Mm-hmm. So maybe they still do it. I doubt it. Maybe they sell the money.
I don't know what they've done.
What was happening at the university now? How did Dr. Isaacs get his job at the university?
He had a brother that was at Pitt. And his brother was teaching at Harvard. He was a lawyer. And he got into some kind of a disagreement about his salary. And he was offered this job at Pitt. And he was here for 3 years. And Harvard communicated with him and offered him a permanent tenure at a very big salary of $10,000 a year. And that was in 1923, I think.
What was his brother's name?
Nathan, Dr. Nathan Isaacs.
What was his department?
What?
What was his department?
He taught a business law. And he went back to Harvard, and he became very friendly with, naturally, a lot of the people, and particularly J. Steele Gow. And he wrote to J. Steele Gow and said, I have a brother that is getting, he was getting his degree at, PhD degree at Harvard. He had graduated University of Cincinnati with 2 degrees, but he went to Harvard for 2 years, and he said, he's, if you have any opening for an economics teacher, he's available. And he asked him to come here.
So he went to graduate school at Harvard?
Yeah, where he received his PhD.
Okay, and that set him up for the job?
As an instructor. At the big salary of $2,200 a year.
Oh, God. What year?
After he was here.
What year did was this about? He started.
He came here in 1926.
I see.
After he was here for a year, the university opened 3 branches. One in
sent you to Johnstown. So he commuted.
Yeah.
We know that. And you took care. You had to take care of a little boy that was sick. You had to commute. We got that last time.
You got that.
Yeah. But now, was Dr. Isaacs pleased at the university and everything that was going on there with the politics and all? Or
well, he was on. I gave you that.
Yeah.
He was on a lot of boards and so on and so forth. There mm-hmm. was always politics there.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after Dr. Litchfield came and when the program for the courses came out in a pamphlet, without saying anything to Asher, who was head of the department, I don't know how many years, it said Asher Isaacs, acting head. And that's when some of these men, highly educated men, in innuendos would say our acting head, you know, emphasize the acting, and that really had a bad effect on him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was head of the department after Dr. McKay. As a matter of fact, when Dean Lanfear was the dean of the business school, he said to Asher, he said, you should have the title dean and I should be your assistant, because he always asked Asher to take care of very important correspondence, because he says, I know you have a flair for writing, and so on. He did a lot of the work of the dean.
Mm-hmm. Well, was he there when they were building the university?
Was he what?
There when they built the cathedral?
No.
No.
I was teaching school when Chancellor Bowman got this beautiful idea of building the Cathedral of Learning. And he asked every school child to contribute 10 cents. And we collected 10 cents from each child, and each child got a certificate. And the certificates cost 20 cents.
You remember getting those?
But he wanted he had the idea of having everybody contribute.
Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Don't write this down, but yeah. I'll tell you what the students called it.
What?
He wanted it even higher. Huh? No, it was
fall down.
32 floors.
Mm-hmm.
They called it Bowman's erection.
Yes, they called it Bowman's folly.
Isn't that something? What about, okay.
Now, Asher was there for 37 years.
Did he retire?
No, he died.
37 years while he was there.
He was there 37 years.
What year did he die?
Hmm?
What year did Asher die?
1963.
Well, he did some work with the war board in Washington.
Well, that didn't materialize. He was called by the... Well, he had two things happen. He got a call one Wednesday that the U.S. government office was in the Clark building and they had to see him immediately. And he said, well, I'll come down tomorrow morning. I don't have classes on Thursday. They said, no, you have to come this afternoon. So he called me up and he said, I don't know what they want. He said, this is the government, the Army. So he says, I don't know when I'll be home. But anyhow, he came home about 7 o'clock, and they told him that they were selecting 32 economists across the United States. And out of these 32... they would select two to be a government advisor, and they would be sent to Europe. And it might entail possibly 10 years. And he had to give them his life history, everything that he ever wrote, all about his publications and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Then he got word and they sent him to Butler, to the Veterans Hospital up there for a physical. And they said, now don't you call us, we'll get in touch with you.
Mm-hmm.
When he came back to school the next day, the different men said to him, well, how did you make out yesterday? They said, what do you mean? They said, oh, don't kid us, we know that you were called down to the... Army office. He said, the FBI has been investigating you all week.
Oh, my God.
So they never called him. They did ask him if he would take up... Let's see. I don't remember whether it was Japanese or some language. He spoke... and he knew German fluently because in Cincinnati, which was the Jewish German settlement, they taught the children in English one day and the next day in German. So he was very fluent in German. Then he received word from Washington that they would like to have an interview with him. And he went to Washington, and they said that they wanted to send an economist to, let's see.
Japan.
I can't think of the name now. Not New Zealand.
Philippines? It'll come to you. Doesn't matter.
To Jakarta, Indonesia.
Oh, Indonesia. I wouldn't remember that either. Okay.
They gave him a sheet of papers with all kinds of instructions on it. They said, for example, if you wear glasses, take two pair with you because they have one optician there and he's not any good. If your wife is going with you, take a supply of Kotex for her as long as you're going to be there. They don't have things like that there. Take liquor. Your wife should take a couple of evening gowns. They were going to pay for all of this transportation. They would take our refrigerator. They said, bring a toilet seat. You don't dare go out with a pencil showing in your pocket. Somebody will knock you down and take it.
I hope you didn't go.
And they said that they gave all, it was terrible. The conditions were terrible. Anyhow, he gets another call from Washington. They want to see him. They changed their minds about sending somebody to Indonesia, and would he be willing to go to Australia?
Better.
So I immediately looked up to see if there was a Jewish population there. And you know, Ruth Ann was in school at the time.
How old?
And we had agreed to go there. Then he gets another communication from them. They changed their mind about Australia and would be willing to go to Japan.
Hope he said no.
So by that time, they asked him to take a leave of absence for a year, which he did. They said this would be for a year. So the university hired somebody to take
his job.
By that time, they kept changing around, and he got disgusted, and he said, I'm sorry. He said, I'm not interested in going. Well, his roommate at one time, Dr. Amos, did you remember J. Elwood Amos?
Yeah.
You remember him? He was so disgusted
Was he a dean?
No. He taught economics. He was so disgusted with things at Pitt that he left Pitt and took the job of
job to Japan. Mrs. Isaacs is looking for one of her papers. Well, how about if we get it later because the tape's ready? No problem.
I have it here.
Maybe. Where Dr. Amos took the job.
Pennsylvania, wait a minute.
We'll come here for a while. Okay. So what did Dr. Isaacs do for the year?
Dr. Amos said that was a dirty trick that the government did to you, and I'm not going to see you waste a whole year. He said, I'm going to give you a job. And he gave him a job of writing a book about Pittsburgh. And I have a copy of it.
Isn't it? And what was it about?
That's what I'm trying to remember.
He was commissioned to write a book about Pittsburgh. What was the name of it?
I'll have to find it for you.
We'll get it. And he did that. He wrote the book and he searched the history. Well, that was exciting.
That took him a whole year.
Mm-hmm. That was a nice change in students. Okay, what do you think he'd say today about the students and what's going on at college and the changes?
You mean what he thought?
What do you think he would think? about the current university classes?
I don't really know. I have lost contact. I was so disgusted with Pip, and he was too. The way he was treated, and Ruth Ann and I feel that that contributed partly to his end. But I can only tell you about some of the faculty. When Ruth Ann, after she was there for 2 years, and she had to make up her mind to matriculate whatever school she wanted to, and at the time that she was there, there was no Phi Beta Kappa because the national organization took away the charter, the Phi Beta Kappa chapter, because they wouldn't hire a teacher. I think they thought he was too liberal. So they did not have a Phi Beta chapter for 10 years. And
they have it now?
They do. The reason that we were sorry was because the Isaacs family is the only family in the United States that had 8 Phi Beta Kappas. And Ruth Ann
was eligible.
She was eligible. She and her name was Harriet